Ananda Goti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai, Kantandara Charya Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai, Premsi Gaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadara Srivastari Sri Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaura Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Guru and Gaura. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
नमस्ते वासुदेवाय नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय In Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, this is the first chapter, questions by Vidura. This morning we're going to do texts number 5 and 6. 5 has no purport. We're going to chant number 5. Sutta Uvacha Saha Evam Rishivarya Ayam Prishtaha Rajna Parikshita Prati Aha Tam Subahuvit Pritatma Sruyatam Iti Suta Uvacha Sa evam rishi varyoyam Rishto rajna prarikshita Pratyahatam subahuvit Pritatma sruyatam iti Suta uvacha Sa evam rishivaryoyam Rishto rajna parikshita Pratyahatam subahuvit Pritatma sruyatam iti Suta uvacha Sa evam rishivaryoyam Vrishto rajna parikshita Pratyahatam subahuvit Pritatma sruyatam iti Sairam Rishivaryoyam Vrishto Rajna Parikshita Pratyahatam Subahuvit Pratyahatam Subahuvit
Sutta uvacha
Sutta uvacha
Sa evam rishivaryoyam
Sa evam rishivaryoyam
Ushturajna parikshita
Ushturajna parikshita
Pratyahatam suvahudi
Pratyahatam suvahudi
Pritatma sriyatam iti
Yeah.
Sri Suta Goswami said,
Saha,
he,
evam,
thus,
Rishivaryaha,
the great Rishi,
Vayam,
Shukadev Goswami,
Prishtaha,
being questioned,
Rajna,
by the king, Parikshita,
Maharaj Parikshita,
Prati,
to,
Aha,
replied,
Tam,
unto the king,
Subahuvit,
highly experienced,
Prita
Atma,
fully satisfied.
Suryatam,
please hear me.
Iti,
thus. Translation. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, the great sage Shukadeva Goswami was highly experienced and was pleased with the king. Thus being questioned by the king, he said to him, please hear the topics attentively. So then he begins to speak in the next text, Shukadeva Goswami. You recall that Maharaj Parikshit is asking what conversation took place when Vidura met with Maitreya Muni. They happened upon each other, and Vidura asked, sat down and began to ask him many questions. So that's what Maharaj Parikshit is asking about. What were the questions and what were the answers? So I'm very happy with him. And now, reply. So that's text 6. I'll just read the text. Sri Suka Uvacha Yadaturajja Sasutan Sadhun Pushnan Nadarmi Navinashta Dristihi Bratur Yavishtasya Sutan Vibandun Pravesha Laksha Bhavane Dadaha. Translation. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, King Dhritarashtra became blind under the influence of impious desires to nourish his dishonest sons. And thus he set fire to the lacquer house to burn his fatherless nephews, the Pandavas. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Dhritarashtra was blind from birth, but his blindness in committing impious activities to support his dishonest sons was a greater blindness than his physical lack of eyesight. The physical lack of sight does not bar one from spiritual progress. But when one is blind spiritually, even though physically fit, that blindness is dangerously detrimental to the progressive path of human life. For the text again, Sri Tuta Goswami said, the great sage Shukadeva Goswami was highly experienced and was pleased with the king. Thus being questioned by the king, he said to him, please hear the topics attentively. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, King Dhritarashtra became blind under the influence of the impious desires to nourish his dishonest son. And thus he set fire to the lacquer house to burn his fatherless nephews, the Pandavas. So, actually we have a conversation within a conversation here. Suta Goswami is speaking to the sages at Naimisharanya Forest,
who is then recounting the conversation between between Maharaj Parikshit and Shukadeva Goswami, who is recounting the conversation between Vaidura and Maitreya Muni. So there's people like a quotation marks within quotation marks within quotation, three layers deep we're down into this. That's what's happening. So first we go back to Shukadeva, who is now telling Maharaj Parikshit about the circumstances regarding Vidura's leaving his home and meeting with Maitreya. So it begins here, how the trouble start was with the spiritual blindness of King Dhritarashtra. So it says here, he was described, na dharmena vinashta drishti. He was not performing dharma. Vinashta drishti. He had lost his insight. And so therefore, just see his position. He was taking care of his own nephews. He was their guardian, their own protector, their father Pandu being dead. So they were given over to the older brother, the king. But not really the king. He's like a... you recall, he could not become king because his blindness couldn't perform the functions of a king. So therefore the kingship passed into his brother Pandu. And then Pandu, passing away early, left his five orphan sons. So meanwhile Dhritarashtra had 100 of them children. So Dhritarashtra would have been king and suddenly he found himself in charge, because Yudhisthira and the others were minors, they're just little children. So until Yudhisthira could ascend the throne, Dhritarashtra was going to run things. But Dhritarashtra's own sons are thinking, well, you know, our father should have been king. And therefore, actually, not Yudhisthira, but Duryodhana, the oldest, he should be king. So they became very envious of their cousins. And this is the root of the problems between them. So so this says here, Swasutana Sadhun Pushan. Dhritarashtra's fault is that his own sons were not honest. And they were ambitious and wanted to, by fair means or foul, take over the kingdom from their cousins. So Dhritarashtra, his fault was his attachment to his sons. He wasn't such a bad guy, in a way. His natural affection for his sons. Although he committed greatly evil deeds, the root of his greatly evil deeds was a simple thing of attachment to his own children, which was so great that even though he knew that they were impiously directed and their ambitions were ungodly, he, because of his attachment, he couldn't resist. Sometimes letting them do what they wanted, or sometimes helping them in their endeavors. So here Prabhupada is talking about this blindness, which made him so disqualified and created such havoc not only in his own life but in the life of so many other people. So we ask ourselves, what does it mean to say that someone is spiritually blind? They cannot see. They have no insight. So here we see that the cause of this spiritual blindness is simply this material attachment. That material attachment is so strong. Oh, it can become so strong that people will do anything to satisfy it. Even though he knows better, still that affection for his son was so great. So this is where we see that people fail in their efforts to make any spiritual progress. It's a simple thing. It is this material attachment to such a degree. Well, even if they're pious, they may initially not wish to break the laws and just to satisfy their desires in a legal way, but then either they come under some stressful situation where their desires are extraordinary, or they're under some kind of pressure, extreme financial pressure. And that's why, for example, crime increases at Christmas time. The man is working very hard, and his children have been watching the commercials, and they made their list of the things that they need and want to have, and he feels, how can I not satisfy my children? How can I not give them what they want? He loves his children. So many crimes are committed because of love, huh? He loves his children, wants to satisfy them. Christmas is coming. And so that's when he begins to... that's when crime starts to go up. What businesses call inventory shrinkage. That means their own employees steal. Stealing by their own employees. Many of them who consider these a fringe benefit of their job. Inventory shrinkage goes up. Shoplifting goes up. Burglaries go up. In the course of these burglaries, sometimes people are shot and killed. And for what? All in the name of parental affection. It's a fact. We have to understand this interesting fact in the world that people who are doing bad, duskritina, we were discussing last night, they don't say, I'm doing bad. They say, I'm doing good. Nobody announces, now I'm going to do something evil. They're going to, no, whatever it is going to be good. So just like the person who's going around breaking into houses, he's doing good. He's taking care of his children. These people I'm breaking into, they have too much anyway. They need to become a little more renounced. I'm poor and they're richer than me, so somehow through an unjust social system, they've stolen from me, so I'm going to take some back, a redistribution of wealth. I'm not powerful enough to let the have the government do it, so I'll just take matters into my own hands, redistribute the wealth, and my children, who are so unjustly deprived, they'll be satisfied. So in this way, a great justice is performed, and my children get what they deserve. In this way, he does good. Everybody, they do like that. Even the biggest crimes, they are committed in the name of good. They don't announce, just like the crimes we hear about now all the time in Bosnia. To the people who are committing these crimes, massive rape and killing and exporting people from the places they've lived for hundreds of years. This is a good thing. It's cleansing, it's purifying. They call it ethnic cleansing. It's purifying. So they think that they're doing good. The rest of the world is appalled, but to them, it's a good thing. So in this way, people are, this is called blindness. You can't tell what's good and what's evil anymore because these crimes are carried out in this way. Oh, there's so many examples like this. This is because of lack of ability to discriminate. But what destroys that lack of ability to discriminate is these material attachments. I just thought of another example. When the United States, Europeans came to the United States and then they proceeded to exterminate the Native American Indians as much as they could. This was also a great good thing. You're opening up the wilderness for civilization. Right? It was a good thing. Opening up the wilderness for civilization, and you were pacifying savage tribes who had no culture, and giving them also Christianity in the process, if you could, those that were left. This is, people always, they never see what the bad side. But actually, of course, what was going on was the greediest land grab in the history of civilization. Never before in the history of the world, and probably never since, has so much land been available to so many people at practically no cost at all. That was what was given. But it was taken, but the taking they didn't see. They saw they were bringing civilization to the wilderness, and creating prosperity and happiness and so on. It was a good thing. And these poor savages who were living there, practically like animals, they were resisting progress, standing in the way of the advancement of civilization. I always think like that. When the British were exploiting India, oh, they were doing so much good for India. You should hear the glowing accounts of what good they were doing for this country. Giving them so many benefits of modernity and so on. Of course, they were stealing like crazy, but that part they didn't see. So this is everywhere. This system is there. So we have to be careful about the doers of good of this kind of son. And also, Dhritarashtra, he's thinking he's doing a good thing too. After all, who should the kingdom have been? He was just accidental wrong. Why should I have been born blind anyway? It was just an accident. The kingdom really should go to my sons. By some quirk of fate, it's transferred here. So we're just going to set things right a little bit. And my sons are very qualified. Actually, it is said that when Dhritarashtra was the regent and running things, and not so bad. Good administration was taking place. So, in that name of setting things right, and his attachment to his sons, just to get them what they were cheated out of by the circumstances of fate, to rectify things. Therefore, first thing he did was this arson attempt. This house that was made for them of lacquer. You set a match to it and poof, this goes up like that. So we know about this. And only they escaped because of Vidura's giving a hint to Yudhisthira to watch out what's going on. He spoke in some tricky way. I can't remember exactly how.
Huh?
But he, anyway, managed to. You know how he did? He managed to deliver the message to Yudhisthira that this is. Vidura was always trying to protect the Pandavas, although his situation was a little awkward. He was Dasiputra, so he couldn't participate fully. But still he tried to protect them like this. So we learn this lesson from Dhritarashtra, who could have been a good man, but because of his extreme attachment to his sons, he was led on a bad path. So this is the problem. When people's material desires, they become inflamed, then people will do anything. Otherwise, honest person. So actually, having material desires is dangerous. You may think that, I'll simply satisfy my material desires according to rules and regulations of scripture, but sometimes you get under some stress or pressure, extreme pressure. And sometimes maybe there's not so much pressure, but you can get away with it. The situation is such that you could steal or cheat and you think you'll not get caught. And so the temptation is there, the rewards seem great, the risks seem less. And so just one time I'll stray from the path of correctness and do something. And then if it works once, then you're tempted, well, I've already done one thing, why not do another thing like that? So then the whole world starts to decline in this way. So this is a... From this way, material desires are the cause of so many sinful activities, because it destroys people's knowledge and their discrimination. They may have a conscience, but when the desire becomes intense enough, that conscience disappears. And they do so many abominable acts. And also, at any rate, the material desires that a person has, they also bind him to the material world. In any case, even if he's completely pious, and his material desires keep him in the cycle of birth and death in the material world, and therefore he does not get out of this samsara. This is also a kind of blindness that we think that in this material world we can find some situation that will bring us what we actually want. But the disappointment is always there. Krishna is certified. We should take his word for it. Dukalayam shasvatam. The material world is temporary and it is miserable. It's so certified by the Creator. So no matter how many shopping malls we create, and planned communities and golf courses and parks and gardens and whatever we do, it'll still be dukalayam and ashasvatam because of the basic birth, death, old age and disease that is going on everywhere. And just that people are somehow better at keeping these things out of sight, out of mind. Just like they say like that, huh? Out of sight, out of mind. So there are no unsightly spectacles. When the death is going on discreetly, not out in the open. We don't see like that. America is very disturbed now by the problem of homelessness. But they always had this homelessness. It was just that in the early 70s, the people were kept, up until then, were in institutions. There were all over America vast hospitals for the mentally ill, and costing a huge amount of money. And then there was some legislation to liberalize that actually most of these people, they're not any harm to anybody. So we're going to release them. We're not going to keep them in these hospitals. We'll still provide social services, give them money, because most of them are not entirely right in their minds, either just from mental illness in general or often as a result of alcohol and drugs. So they released them. I remember when they did this, at the New York Temple, we saw the news and the devotees said, "Watch out." And then there were all these arrangements. They were going to have little halfway houses and people to monitor them and everything. But that very soon it fell apart. And then all the, suddenly it was just like Calcutta, people living on the streets. This happened. But it wasn't like all of a sudden. These people were already there before. But they were simply, nobody worried because you didn't see them. So usually in a society like this, the miseries you don't see because it's kept out of sight in prisons and mental hospitals and so on. You don't see. We keep it all buried so it looks nice. Only now you have this anomaly. You know, now nobody wants to pay for putting them back out of the way. But you know how they do in Miami when the conventions are coming or the tourist season, they have to practically bulldoze these people into some place. They try to get them out of the way where nobody will see. The government is a big problem. And mostly the problem, for most governments, the problem is it disturbs people to see these people. That's the problem. So they try to make it look nice and not see that these miseries are going on. Similarly, that for dying is carried off as far as possible out of sight. They're very quick at cleaning up the road accidents. It's not just merely efficiency that does it. Nobody wants to be reminded. You know, you go down the roads in India and the wrecks are on the side of the road, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Because everybody in India, everybody knows. You know, that there everything happens out in the street, practically. You know, people are dying, people are... But in this country, we keep it, it's nicer. You know, so people are dying, it's often the hospitals. Even in a hospital, when somebody is dying, they make sure that nobody else in the room knows. They keep it quiet. They have all these methods of not living clear, because in a hospital, you'll actually know. Actually, hospitals, everybody's dying all the time. But you're in the hospital, you don't know it. Because they conduct it in such a way, they take the bodies out at night from their rooms, you know, they keep it. So they like to keep it out of sight. Out of sight, out of mind. Well, this way, there's the illusion. This material world is a nice place where actually, death and disease and old age, they're going on and on and on. So it is not a nice place, Dukalayama Shasvatam, from the highest planet down to the lowest, Krishna says. So you think the higher planets are very nice, but no, it's also even that long span of life for us. It may seem that the demigods or Lord Brahma lives a long time, but to him it's tragically short. Just like our 100 years or whatever to one of these moths that has 2 days to live. There's mayflies that are born. These little, they come out in the summer. They're called mayflies. The spring. They have no stomachs because they live for such a short time. They don't have to eat. So to them, we live such a huge, long life. If they could know that here are these human beings that are living 70 years or so on, they think, oh, that's paradise. So then they get born, they come up here, but then you're here, it doesn't seem, it's so brief. And we're thinking, oh, the demigods live such a long time. But to them, it's over as soon as it begins also. So in these ways, we have to understand that in the material world, the prospects for happiness are very... do not be satisfied. And therefore, we have come here to become transcendentalists. And that, therefore, we've taken on this project that we want to become free from that which binds us to the material world and which is ultimately the cause of all our suffering, which is material desire. In this, we've changed it completely, taken the opposite stance of the rest of the world. And that's what Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita, which people don't believe. Again, but here's Krishna certifying. He's made the world. So when he says that the pleasures that arise from the contact of the senses with the objects, they're the source of all suffering, we have to believe him. He says, he talks of it, samsparashaja bhoga. That's in the fifth chapter, I think. Yehi samsparashaja bhoga. Dukayonaya evate. Samsparsha ja means born of the contact, sparsha, between the senses and the objects. So when the senses are brought into contact with the object, then there's bhoga, enjoyment. So of course everyone says, well, that's happiness. You bring the senses into contact with the objects, there's bhoga, and your life is successful. You simply just have to keep it up. That's all. But that's happiness. Every television commercial, every rumor on the streets, every piece of gossip. So when people meet, what do they talk about? Oh, we went to this restaurant, we had such a nice lunch, we went to this place, we had such a nice time, we met these people, we gratified our senses. The whole world is just talking about, you know, various ways you can gratify your senses. There's always a trial sometimes when one goes home and sits with one's family and relatives, as you have to do to be polite. And in the whole conversation, they're eating some meal, and the whole conversation is about other meals they ate and future meals they hope to eat. And that's that exhausts the topic of conversation, practically. You know? So this is what the whole world is about: samsparashaja, bhoga. And Krishna says, "Dukkha yonaya evate." He says, "It's really that eva is like, you know, barely. It really is the source of all dukkha, but just the opposite of what everybody thinks." It causes all suffering. And he goes on to say, you know, that these pleasures, they have a beginning and an end, and those who are Buddha, they're wise people, they don't take any delight in them. This is big news, huh? Dukkha yonaya evate. And we sometimes have a hard time believing it. So having been brought up, our country, in this country, trains everybody to be consumers. Your duty is to gratify your senses. That's what it means to be a consumer. It's your civic duty. When you gratify your senses, then the country is working well. As soon as the consumer stops consuming, then we have a recession. Or even a depression. That's what you stop consuming, or depression. Everyone is depressed. And the question is, how to start them consuming again? And sometimes they think that actually it's not the financial problem, it's just that everyone is somehow turned off. They call it lack of consumer confidence. The consumer needs confidence. He doesn't need money, he just needs confidence. Because you can always consume without money, because you have credit cards. So when there's lack of consumer confidence, it means he's afraid that somehow or other I'll not be able to pay off in the future. So we have to perk him up a little bit. And so this is a very dangerous thing when people stop consuming. because everything, then there's no jobs for anybody, and then the whole country becomes depressed, in the depression, and there's no happiness unless there's consumption. So those of us who have been trained in this way, this idea of becoming free from sense gratification is economic and social heresy. That's actually a great danger. We're not performing our civic duty. So it's hard for us. And you've just been programmed so many ways. We think that if we just get the right combination of sense gratification, then everything will be fine. So we're not persuaded by Krishna's statement as well as we should be. Partly, of course, because we've just simply become attached. Because the cause of this, the reason for that is the source of all suffering, is that the more, or as soon as we are trying to enjoy the objects of the senses, that pleasure arises there and then we try to enjoy it, is that we fall into the bodily condition of life. We know that all our distress ultimately arises from identifying ourselves with the temporary material body. Otherwise, we understand we are eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. We should contemplate that if we are eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, then we have no problems. All our problems are solved. We've accomplished everything we need to accomplish. But, of course, Krishna consciousness means not just knowing this as a theory, but experiencing ourselves that way. That's why it's called realization. Otherwise, we could just be studying books and saying, yes, this is eternal. This is the philosophy. I'm eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. No problem. Then we go out and suffer. But what we want is realized knowledge. We want to experience ourselves as we actually are. In a way, you see, we're not even living our own lives. Our lives are Satchidananda. And we're not living our own lives. We're living bogus lives. Bogus lives mean we are living artificial life by which we've identified ourselves with the temporary material body and the material mind. And in that false identity, we're trying to live an eternal life full of knowledge and full of bliss. Doesn't work. And the more we try to have bliss with the body, the more we suffer. Because trying to have bliss on the basis of the body means we identify with the body. It's impossible to enjoy the senses without also taking possession of the material body with your false ego. That's what happens. Anytime there's sense gratification and I'm enjoying, of course you may feel pleasure. You can feel pleasure without enjoying it. A devotee actually has to learn to tolerate pleasure just like he tolerates pain, because sometimes pleasure comes and you just have to tolerate it. But as soon as I say, oh, I want this, this is mine, I'm going to do it again, you know, let me keep it, we grab that material pleasure that comes, then automatically the false ego is there. In other words, we identify ourselves with the material body. And then we've fallen into birth and death. We identify with this material body, and then the horrible things that are going to happen to it, old age and disease and death, then all of a sudden they're happening to us, and our eternal life full of bliss and knowledge is no longer accessible to our consciousness. This is what happens. So why so many rules and regulations restricting the sense gratification, and why for those who are actually want to be transcendentalists is this idea of getting completely free from material desires there? Well, that's the reason. That's the reason. If we're serious about transcendental life, then we have to become free from these material desires. free from impious activities like Dhritarashtra, and also free from pious activities also. The temptations of piety are sometimes worse than temptations of sin. Because if then you really think, oh, I can become happy in this material world. Well, that's why so Krishna spends so much time telling us about we should not be attracted by the flowery language of the Vedas, because we also become attracted to that kind of life. So that's our business. As transcendentalists, we have to become free from these all kinds of material attachments. But it can be done. At least in Krishna consciousness, if we want it, then we can do it. Because two things. Well, one thing really. The only thing that makes it possible is that in devotional service, we can gain all transcendental aid. Krishna consciousness, becoming free from material desires, is not a do-it-yourself project. It's a project in which, if we want that position, then Krishna will help us. All we want. The problem is we're not asking Krishna. Prabhupada said one time, this in a purport, he's talking about Lord Nisringadev. He says that when we pray every day, we say, Bahir Nisringa Hridaye Nisringa. Maybe we mouth these words so many times. Means Nisringa is everywhere, Bahir, outside, and Hridaye Nisringa. Nisringadev is in my heart. So Prabhupada says, when we say Hridaye Nisringa, what we are actually doing is that we are praying to Nisringadev to appear in our hearts. And what will he do there? He will kill our Hiranyakashipu-like material desires. Because Hiranyakashipu is the embodiment of material desires. Wealth and sex. Two essential requirements. That's it, Hiranya and Kashipu. So each one of us, our material desires in our hearts is like a Hiranyakashipu running wild in our hearts. So how can we destroy this? Like a little demon in the heart. We can't by ourselves. It's too powerful. Any more than anybody in the material world could destroy Hiranyakashipu. But finally, when the Srinagadev intervened, then, you know, he was killed. And it says the same way that with our fingernail we could take an ant, and there's no more power than that compared to the Srinagadev. So, if we are suffering so much from our material desires and feel that they are more than I can handle, then we simply have to, with some feeling, Hridaye Nisringa, come here. You tear apart my material desires. Then Krishna will come. So, and then he'll purify us. So that's how it can be done. Now the next thing is we have to want to invite Nisringadev, because maybe we're sitting down having parties with Hiranyakashipu. There's a famous Saint Augustine. He said, "Lord, give me chastity, but not just yet." So we've also become attached even to having our material desires. So therefore we're putting off inviting Krishna. But if we actually sincerely ask Krishna to come and destroy our material desires, he can do it. And there will not be any problem. But we can't say, Krishna, destroy my material desires. But not until 98. Not on Saturday and Friday and Saturday or whatever, you know, then he won't. So all that's required is our sincere invitation, and then we can, in this way, become free from all danger in this material world. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Anyone have any questions or comments?
Agora, Sr. Prabhupada.